Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
The hardest thing is probably I did just have a baby. And she was always there. She loved her grandkids. And she was always there for my other kids when they were born. And so it was hard not having her there as I was going through my pregnancy. It was considered a high-risk pregnancy, so I didn't have her to go talk to and comfort me every day. I just wish that she could have been there and shared in those events. All of my kids' sports events, she would go to those. And every time that my son has a game or my daughter has a track meet, you know, I miss having her there.
On April 10th, 2019, 69-year-old Betty Alexander was at her apartment in Sullivan, Missouri. Nothing seemed amiss, and despite a recent visit to her deceased husband's grave, Betty was in good spirits, excited about her grandchildren's upcoming sports games and her regular visits with family. A few days later, her daughter knew that something was wrong when Betty didn't answer the phone. Her daughter went to Betty's apartment, but she wasn't home and hadn't been to church. Without any warning at all, Betty was gone. 2 years later, her daughter Tanya is continuing to carry the torch for Betty and trying to find out exactly what happened to her mom, because as we all know, there are always clues left behind. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 298 of The Vanished, Betty Alexander's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Betty Alexander was an older woman who was finding her way in life, living alone after the death of her husband. But Betty found joy and solace in so many of the things she enjoyed in life. She doted on her grandchildren and loved spending time with her family. Betty's daughter Tanya reached out to us because, like so many of the stories you hear on the show, Betty's story hasn't garnered much media attention. We spoke with Tanya several times to learn Betty's story and share it with you. This is what she told us about her mom.
She was basically what I would describe her as, your typical grandma. She was all about family, spending time with them. She loved to cook and bake. She was known for her cooking skills. She was pretty quiet. She kind of kept to herself. She had a few friends that were in her apartment complex that she would talk to. But other than that, it was just mostly about staying with her family. Growing up, she was a great mom. Anytime we had birthday parties, she went out of the way. She would make 3-4 different cakes, have a big spread of food. She always, every holiday, she would decorate. It was all about basically trying to make every day special. She was always there. She was very caring. She loved to garden. She loved to plant flowers. She was always in her flower garden. She liked doing crafts. She just kind of kept to herself. She would go around. She'd talk to the neighbors that were there. She had a church that she had started going to, and she'd go on Sundays. But other than that, she didn't drive, so she relied on family or her one neighbor to take her grocery shopping or to run whatever errands she needed. But she pretty much just kept to the apartment complex. She would mess with flowers in her little flower bed. But other than that, if she wasn't spending time with family, she was just kind of staying at her apartment.
She never left the apartment complex unless it was with family. She wouldn't go for walks. She stayed right there in her apartment.
In December of 2018, shortly before Christmas, Betty's husband had passed away. She was now living alone in her apartment, and Tanya wanted to make sure she was getting out and spending time with her family as they healed from the loss of Tanya's dad and Betty's lifelong partner.
She was living at the Center Street Apartments in Sullivan, Missouri, and she had been living there. It was with her and dad, and then he passed away 2 days before Christmas, right before her disappearance. And so after he had passed away, she was coming and spending. At the beginning, it was weeks at a time with me. And then after that, it went to every weekend that she would come and spend with me at my house.
Living alone after the passing of her husband wasn't Tanya's only concern. Her mom had recently been diagnosed with the early stages of dementia. And though her apartment community in Sullivan, Missouri was mostly for older people, she wanted to keep Betty as active and engaged as possible.
She had the very beginning stages of dementia, and I had talked to her doctor about it after I had actually been to some doctor's appointments with her prior to her disappearance, but also afterwards. And the doctor had said that it was very early stages to where her medication was so low that you wouldn't notice if she wasn't taking it. Her neighbors didn't know that she had dementia. When she came and spent the weekends with us, she would mix up a name here and there or forget a name, something like that. But she could remember my son's sports schedules or give you directions places and never really showed any signs of severe dementia.
I don't know exactly how far back she had been diagnosed with that. I know after Dad had passed away, I went with her. I was taking her to her doctor's appointments, and that's when I was talking to her doctor as far as they were trying to regulate the medication and the fentanyl patches, the fentanyl for her back pain because it was so bad. She would either have to have a lower dosage of fentanyl and a higher dosage of the dementia medicine or vice versa.
We wanted to know more about these fentanyl patches as a potentially dangerous and even lethal drug when misused. So we asked Tanya why her mom was using the patches.
Back when I was a kid, she had injured her back when I was in school. And so she wasn't able to work anymore. And she was a stay-at-home mom. So she was there all the time. She was on disability.
She actually had a back surgery done. It was back when I was a kid, and she had rods and screws put in her back. So that's what the fentanyl patches had been prescribed for. I know she had been using them probably, I want to say, at least 5 years.
We'll come back to the importance of this pain medication later in the story as it becomes more important. Still, we wanted to stress that we found no indication that Betty was misusing or abusing her medication. Fentanyl is a drug we often see in the media, usually in a negative story, but it can be very effective in reducing chronic pain in patients when used properly. Tanya told us that there was nothing odd or out of the ordinary that took place in the days prior to Betty's disappearance, and she was looking forward to some upcoming family events, but that everything changed in nearly the blink of an eye when Tanya hadn't heard from her mom in a few days.
The only thing that really stands out to me is the week before we had gone to Dad's gravesite for the first time since he had passed. It was his birthday, and I had taken her up then. But other than that, we would go and pick her up on the weekends. She seemed like she was doing okay, seemed in good spirits for, you know, just losing her husband. She was very involved still with the grandkids. Nothing else that really stands out as anything different besides the fact that I wasn't there that weekend to pick her up.
It was the first weekend since Dad had passed away that we made arrangements that she wasn't going to come and spend the night at my house. My daughter had a track meet about 2 hours away, and it was an all day. And I knew Mom has the rods and screws in her back, and I knew she couldn't sit for that long in the car and then on the bleachers.
Tanya offered to pick Betty up on Friday and drop her off at home Saturday morning before she left for the sporting event. Betty decided that rather than just spend Friday night at Tanya's, that she would stay home that weekend instead, and they made arrangements for Tanya to pick up Betty after church on Sunday. But things didn't go as planned.
Okay, well, then I'll come by Sunday and I'll pick you up and then we can get your grocery shopping done and we can spend a little time then. So I went to the track meet and it was later that afternoon that my brother had called and said, hey, have you heard from Mom? I tried calling and she's not answering. I said, no, I haven't talked to her. Told him I was at the track meet and that I was supposed to be picking her up the next day to go grocery shopping. So the next day, when I was on my way over to her house, I called her, let her know that I was on my way. She didn't answer, which she had a phone that was on the wall. And even though it was across the room, somehow she would always answer on the first ring. So
when she didn't answer the phone, I knew something was wrong. And then when I got to her apartment, I knocked on the door and there was still no answer. And I had a key, so I let myself in. And then I saw her Meals on Wheels was sitting on the table. And my first instinct was to grab the milk that was there, and it was warm. And they had the box of meals they always deliver on Friday to last through the weekend. So I went looking around her apartment, and there were no signs of her. I got back into the living room, and her glasses were laying open on the arm of her recliner. Whenever she stayed with me, as soon as she would go to get up, she would immediately put her glasses on. It was something she needed all day to wear to be able to see. And so I immediately went outside, was going to the neighbors. I called my brother, told him that Mom wasn't there. I couldn't find her. Her glasses were laying on the arm of the chair. I got one of her neighbors, which is my sister-in-law's uncle. He went around asking other neighbors if they had seen her while I got on the phone with the police. From there, the police had come out and they basically just asked questions about her and what had happened. They brought in some canines and started searching with canines. Had the fire department there also on foot and searching for her. Nothing had been touched. Everything was exactly how it had been. You know, every day that I would go there afterwards, I would just sit there looking around, scanning her apartment to just try and find one thing that was out of place. Nothing had been touched.
Tanya immediately started looking for explanations as to what had happened to her mom, and she told us where she started. She knew she needed to pinpoint who was the last to see Betty and when. According to her notes, she knew that Betty's cleaning lady had been to the home at around noon on Wednesday, April 10th, and the cleaning lady had seen Betty.
She did have a cleaning lady that would also, she would come in, clean, do her laundry for her. She'd bring food to her from the mission. And then also if she needed something picked up from the grocery store, she'd do that for her. I actually did talk to her and she had brought Mom food from the mission that day at noon. And she said that she seemed in good spirits, said that she was feeling better and that she was finally getting to be able to sleep a little bit more. She said nothing out of the ordinary.
It was after Betty's cleaning lady left on Wednesday the 10th that something seems to have happened to Betty. There were other people who saw Betty on that Wednesday after the cleaning lady. A delivery driver from Betty's pharmacy stopped by around 1:15 p.m. to drop off her medications. Betty then made a phone call to her pharmacy shortly after that at 1:33 p.m. Then, around 3 p.m., a neighbor spotted Betty in the garden outside of her apartment. Betty had various people who visited her home throughout the week, including her cleaning lady, the pharmacy driver, Meals on Wheels, and her physical therapist. The physical therapist called to confirm an appointment the morning after Betty was last seen, and Meals on Wheels also stopped by. Strangely, they weren't able to make contact with Betty on Thursday. Tanya told us more.
I do know that following Thursday, her physical therapy had called to verify her appointment at 10:16, and she didn't answer. She was last seen by Jerry, which is my sister-in-law's uncle. He had seen her in her flower garden at 3 p.m. on Wednesday. So between 3 p.m. on Wednesday and at least 10:16 on Thursday is when she would have disappeared. And Meals on Wheels also attempted to deliver that day twice, and they had no contact. And then on Friday, they attempted again, and they said the door was ajar, so they left the food on the table, which she had an agreement if she wasn't there that they could just leave it, and they closed the door then. And then whenever I got there, it was locked.
Tanya filed a police report with the Sullivan Police Department on Sunday, April 14th, 2019, after she still couldn't find her mom. No one had reported seeing her since Wednesday, several days prior. Police did come out to the residence, and the department authorized a silver alert to be published, given Betty's age and medical conditions. We contacted the Sullivan Police Department for an interview, but no one got back to us. They did, however, release records to us that have provided good insight into the work that they did do. From the timeline that they have nailed down, it appears that something happened to Betty after she was spotted during the day on Wednesday, and the following morning when no one was able to reach her. Tanya kept up with her own search, scouring the neighborhood for any type of clue.
We actually went door to door asking people if they had any security cameras that we could check. And unfortunately, there was just very few cameras that were up in that area. I wouldn't have thought she would have just answered the door to anybody with her being there by herself. But a couple weeks prior to that, she was telling me about a medical insurance agent that had stopped by, and she had been talking to him and about getting her insurance switched over. So apparently she would have answered the door to anybody that would have come. It was a senior apartment complex, so it was all elderly people that had lived there. Safe part of town, right in the middle of town. Nothing that I had ever personally heard going on in that area to make me think that it was not safe. They had lived there probably about 4 years and never had any issues other than having some solar lights out of their garden taken.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. There was one perplexing clue that came from a clerk at City Hall. Tanya told us more.
They said that on Wednesday, the day that she went missing, she was seen at City Hall to change the electric from Dad's name into her name. At 10:30 that morning, They said that the only description that they could provide was there was a scraggly man seen standing by her. They didn't know if he was with her or if he was by himself. So there is also that question of how did she get to City Hall, which is several blocks away from her apartment complex, when she didn't drive? And was this guy, did he give her a ride? Was he there with her? Or was he just completely by himself? City Hall, unfortunately, did not have cameras, either outside or inside either. Nothing.
This detail is particularly interesting. No one knows who this man was or has come forward to identify him. But it stuck out to us that she was spotted with an unknown male on the last day that she was ever seen alive. Another interesting detail related to this mystery man at City Hall that we learned from police records is that the clerk reported seeing Betty on April 10th in the morning. She had gone to conduct some business related to her husband's passing several months prior. And the clerk told police that the form appeared to be filled out by someone else and signed by Betty. Tanya later told police that she had filled out the form for Betty, but that she'd put it in the mail, and that Betty would have relied on Tanya for a ride to City Hall, as it was too far for her to walk. Since Tanya remembers mailing the form in, it remains a mystery as to why Betty would have gone to City Hall herself to file it again. The clerk remembered this man that was with Betty. You heard Tanya tell us that the clerk described this person as having scraggly hair. The clerk checked other transactions made around the time that Betty was at City Hall, and they found no transactions involving an individual matching this man's description. Everyone has wondered if the man was there with Betty or if he was just behind her in line. But since there were no transactions involving a person matching that description, it sounds more likely that he was there with Betty. This is just one small part of the mystery, though. It's important to note here that even though this scraggly-haired man is a mysterious clue, Betty was also spotted alive and alone after that time by several witnesses. Earlier in this story, you heard Tanya mention that her mother had been using fentanyl patches. She used them as a method of pain relief for an old back injury. After Betty disappeared, one of the only things missing from her home were some of these patches. Here's Tanya again.
She must not have been using every pain patch. I don't think she was using them, like taking it off exactly when she should have and then putting a new one on, because she did have some extras that would have covered, I think it was about a month, maybe 2 months supply on her dresser that were out of boxes. So she had plenty of the patches. And then there was an empty box from March that was at the top of her trash can in her kitchen. She had a delivery that day, and they had delivered 2 boxes of fentanyl patches. Box 2 of 2 was there with her medication. Box 1 of 2 was missing and nowhere to be found. Even searching the house, we still never did find that box 1 of 2 of the fentanyl patches that was just delivered. And actually, her last phone call was to the pharmacy at 1:33. The missing box of patches and the fact that she had $200 extra in her wallet, I can't figure out why that would be. And if it was somebody that was coming for the patches, why they didn't take the rest of her medication or the rest of the patches, or I don't know if maybe they thought it would be too obvious, or it just doesn't make sense. She also had her bag of prescription medication was in her closet. She had, I believe it was like an antidepressant. And then I believe there may have been a bipolar medication in there as well. She had just a huge list of medications that she had. I had gone through the medication that she had left at the house. She had a bag of everything that she was taking, and then she had her pill box where she would sort it out in. And I went through the medication that she had, and she had been taking what she had been prescribed, and I even checked with her Medicaid or Medicare to see if maybe somebody had refilled the prescription after she went missing to have it show up on there. And there has been no activity on that either. Looking at her box that she would sort her pills through, she had taken all of her medication up through the bedtime medication, which she always took at 7 o'clock. on that day, on that Wednesday, but she didn't take any of her medication for that following Thursday. Every time that she'd come over, she had it sorted in little envelopes, which medication she had to take when. And I had been there when she was sorting through her medication for the week. She would have it all sorted out.
Betty's medication is one thing that helps us to keep narrowing down the timeline of when she may have disappeared. According to Tanya's notes, Betty's medication was taken all day on Wednesday, April 10th, including her nighttime medication that she would have taken before bed. That leads us to believe that she was alive and well in her apartment that evening. However, none of her medications for the next day, Thursday, April 11th, had been taken. We know from other pieces of the timeline that Betty was seen at City Hall on Wednesday morning, and also that her cleaning lady had come by in the afternoon, after she had been spotted with the scraggly-haired man earlier that morning at City Hall. Additionally, Betty's medication delivery service came by her home that day and delivered two boxes of Betty's fentanyl patches, one of which is missing. Betty also had older boxes of the fentanyl patches that were left behind. What happened to that missing box of patches? And if someone took it, why did they leave the others? Tanya couldn't figure this out either, and she wondered if perhaps her mom resorted to selling some of the patches, and if that could explain why some were missing. It would also explain another odd clue in Betty's disappearance, that extra money that Tanya reported finding in Betty's purse.
The only thing that I can't figure out is why. It really bothers me, the fact of the missing fentanyl patches and the fact of the extra money that was found in her purse. I don't know if maybe she was started selling some, and that's where she had the extra money. I had handled her bills, so I knew exactly what was coming out of the bank account for bills. There was nothing. There were no withdrawals for the $200. I had actually, just a couple weeks before that, had to show her how to use her debit card if she needed to do a withdrawal. She got a new card, seeing if it worked to be able to use at the store. We ran by the ATM and I showed her how to use it then.
Betty doesn't have a criminal record and no history of selling her medications or illegal use of drugs. Is it possible that someone took advantage of Betty? She was an older woman in the beginning stages of dementia. Perhaps someone who knew she was on the patches and knew when they were delivered came to her explaining that they were in pain and desperately in need of relief. And Betty felt bad. It's strange that both Betty and just one box of her patches disappeared right after her patches were delivered. When you look at all of the points on the timeline, all sightings of Betty end on the afternoon of Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. Her nighttime medications were taken on Wednesday, and all of her Thursday medications were left behind untouched. It sounds like something happened to Betty on Wednesday night after she took those nighttime medications. Law enforcement had a command post set up at a fire station not far from Betty's apartment. Two employees from Fidelity Communications made their way to the command post to report that they had seen Betty. They both claimed to have seen Betty more than 24 hours after she was reportedly last seen in the garden at her apartment.
There were two witnesses that stated they believed that they saw her the following day at 5 o'clock, right down, it was a block from her apartment complex at the fire station. So this is a very busy section of town right there off of Main Street. And they were leaving work and had seen her standing in the middle of the road just staring at the fire station. And the guy said that he had walked all the way through, closed the gate, got to his truck. When he went to leave, he actually had to drive around her because she wouldn't move. She just stood there frozen in the middle of the road staring at the fire station. And there were two witnesses. They claimed that it was her that they saw standing there. But that's the only testimony that we have of her being seen anywhere after Wednesday afternoon. I don't see how she could have just up and left. Her neighbors said, you know, I asked him, I said, have you ever known her to go from walks away from the apartment complex? Because I never knew that she would. And all of them said no. They have never seen her walk away from that apartment complex. She always stayed right there.
Was the sighting of Betty from two separate people a case of mistaken identity? Or could it have actually been Betty? We know that Betty was showing early signs of dementia, but it hadn't progressed to the point where her family believes it would have been a factor in her disappearance. However, is it possible that Betty was there, wandering in the area more than 24 hours after she was last seen? Could she have been disoriented or unable to find her way back home? It's hard to know. So many strange things have taken place that have led Tanya to wonder about whether or not someone would have wanted to hurt Betty, for her medication or perhaps for some other reason. One of the most puzzling things she told us is about what happened to her mother's apartment without Tanya's knowledge.
My sister-in-law's uncle moved from one apartment in the complex and moved into mom's apartment. That's very odd to me. From what I was told is it was a better view. He could keep an eye on the place from that apartment. It had started on Mother's Day weekend. It was right after the private investigator was at mom's house. And a couple hours later, I was getting phone calls and text from my brothers, and they were wanting to meet up for Mother's Day at mom's house. And my son had a baseball game that was supposed to be going on in St. Louis. And so I told him we were expecting rain. So I told him to let me see if we were supposed to be at that game. And if not, we'd schedule a time that we could go over there. Once the game was canceled, I messaged him back, said, "Hey, yeah, we can meet up. Let me know what time." My brother said, "Okay, well, I'll get a hold of Dave and let you know." Never heard back from him. And then I had gotten a phone call from her neighbor on Mother's Day night, and she had said that she heard a loud banging at mom's door and that somebody had left like a watering can with flowers on the doorstep. I thought that was odd. The whole town of Sullivan knew that she was missing. So I went over there and I tried my key in the door and my key wouldn't work. I had mom's key and then she had given me dad's key to the apartment too. So I had two keys. I tried the second key and it didn't work either. So I had called the detective and I let him know that none of my keys were working now. And he sent officers over and they found a key that was under the mat. Apparently the locks had been changed. When we got in there, almost all of her belongings were gone. All the pictures on the wall, everything, furniture, it was all gone except for my family's pictures. And so I started texting my brothers and saying, and trying to call them and saying, "Hey, mom's apartment's empty. What's going on?" And never did get a response back. And apparently they had come in with a couple vehicles and a trailer and loaded all of her stuff except for a few things. They loaded it up and they changed the locks. I was paying the rent. I had also been in contact with the landlord and they knew what was going on. And I told them, they're still processing the house. So I'm going to keep paying the rent. And they said, "Yeah, we understand. That's fine." And then my brothers had come back with a response on the Facebook page stating that her lease was being terminated and they were trying to get her stuff out. And I had contacted the landlord and told them about the locks being changed and everything and asked about her lease being terminated. And they said, "No, we weren't aware that the locks were being changed or anything was going on."
We want to take a moment to clarify who Tanya is talking about when she references her sister-in-law's uncle. Tanya has two brothers, John and David. David is married to a woman named Kathy, and Kathy's uncle is Jerry, the man who moved into Betty's apartment and was also the neighbor who last saw Betty in the garden on the last day she was seen alive. When we spoke to Tanya, she was still shocked that her brothers had moved Betty's belongings out without discussing it with her first. The story about the lease being terminated didn't add up with what the landlord had said. Even though she was distressed by the situation, Tanya decided to move on and turn the keys into the landlord.
I wasn't aware that Jerry was going to be moving in. I had gone in and finished cleaning everything that was left out and cleaned up the apartment and gave the keys back to the landlord and then had found out that he had moved in And they had also given her, I had bought her a little table and chairs set for her patio. And next thing you know, it was sitting on his front porch. They claim that mom's stuff is still in storage, but I don't know how much of it has actually been given away. So their reasoning was that the landlord was not going to allow the house, the apartment to stay vacant, and that the rent was past due, but the rent was already paid up. I had spoken to the landlord. They knew what was going on. They had no plans on doing any kind of an eviction. You know, they understood that we were still using the apartment as a scene to try and find any kind of evidence.
We thought that this development was strange. The relative had already been living in Betty's apartment community. Why did he need to move to her apartment? And what about the fact that Tanya had made plans with her brothers for that day? And then they never followed up with her. But it seems as though they had moved Betty's things out of her apartment that day, so that the other relative could move in. But this wasn't the only unexplained aspect involving Jerry, the relative that moved into Betty's apartment. In another odd twist, we were told that Jerry claimed to have found family pictures belonging to Betty in a dumpster around the time of her disappearance. Who threw them out, and why was Jerry looking in the dumpster? Could there have been other items of importance in the trash? What if there was critical evidence in Betty's apartment before they moved all of her stuff out? Tanya couldn't believe it either, and she told the police immediately.
They didn't really seem, they were kind of shocked. And I had explained, you know, what had happened and the stuff being moved out and everything. And I guess maybe because it was family, they didn't seem too concerned.
The clandestine apartment switch in the middle of the night was just the latest in a series of events that didn't make sense after Betty had disappeared. Tanya has two brothers, but they seemed to hesitate when it came to searching for their mom or working to find answers at all. Here's Tanya.
I would do searches in the beginning. It was like the second day that mom was missing. And we were personally going and searching, and we were standing there in the parking lot across from the fire station and trying to discuss a plan. And then all of a sudden they're sitting around talking and joking. And I'm like, guys, mom could be out there dying right now. Every minute counts. We need to get out there. I couldn't believe that, you know, I just wanted to get out there because if there was any hope she was still alive, those minutes could have counted. And they wanted to know everywhere I was searching, everything I was doing before I do it, but I would contact them and say, hey, we're going out at this time, we're going here, and they'd be busy. I don't know, guys may be different, but I don't see how they could not care that their mom is missing. I know they weren't as close to her as me, but I would think any decent human being would care that their mom's missing and try and find her. Just boggles my mind that somebody would react that way when their mom was missing. I was actually going around handing out flyers for the benefit, which I had told them. I said, I want to raise the reward and maybe get somebody to talk. And they were against it. They said they didn't want to put that kind of money in some druggie's hand. I'm like, I don't care who gets the money or what they do with it, as long as we find mom. So they were completely against me throwing this benefit to raise the reward. So I did that on my own.
We did attempt to speak to Betty's sons. We wanted to hear their side of the story. However, one of them responded to us with a really nasty message. They were mad that we had attempted to contact them. And the other one never responded to us at all. It struck us as odd that anyone would choose not to look for their missing parent. But Tanya said one of her brothers, Dave, had recently been seeing Betty more. Their relationship had been improving, and so the lack of interest in looking for their mother caught Tanya off guard.
He was going over. I would do kickboxing classes on Thursdays, and his daughter had started going to them too. And so he would go over to mom's on Thursdays while she was at class. So that was the first time that he really started coming around, which, you know, I was excited that he finally showed interest, because I kept telling him, I said, mom's not doing good. She's getting older. Dad, he was doing really bad as far as his health went. So I was happy that he was finally going to see her. And then that Thursday night after she went missing, I asked him if he had gone by there, and he said no, that he went to Jerry's apartment instead. And he said that mom's lights were off. He thought it was kind of odd with it being that early in the day. And I asked if he went and checked on her, and he said no. That was kind of strange.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Convinced that Betty didn't wander off or leave on her own, Tanya expressed her concerns that perhaps someone had hurt Betty. There was a maintenance man at her apartment community that would have had a master key to all of the apartments. However, the police records we received indicated that the maintenance man was fully cooperative with law enforcement. He voluntarily took a voice stress test that didn't indicate any deception. And he also willingly came in for his own interviews. But is it possible that someone else wanted to hurt Betty? We were asked not to share certain information in order to protect the integrity of the investigation. But we did learn that there have been some family members who have refused to talk with the police or to consent to interviews or voice stress tests. So it seems to some that these people may have something to hide. We also learned from the file that another family member's name had been brought up many times during the course of the investigation. This person came in and voluntarily spoke to investigators. This happened shortly after Betty disappeared, and this person claimed that they hadn't seen her in months. However, when a voice stress test was administered, deception was indicated on two questions: have you seen Betty in the last 2 weeks? And do you know where Betty is? None of this is enough to say that any of these people hurt Betty, but it's easy to see how certain family members have become suspicious of one another. One question that we kept coming back to was, why would someone want to hurt a vulnerable woman suffering from several chronic medical conditions? Is it possible that someone wanted her medication? What if Betty refused to hand it over and an altercation ensued in Betty's home? We asked Tanya about this, and she told us that the police kept giving her reasons why they couldn't treat Betty's apartment like a crime scene. And they didn't seem to think the missing fentanyl patches were a red flag either.
They didn't seem interested really in it at all. I was kind of shocked that they didn't really see that as, you know, a red flag or anything. I had asked them that first night. They had several officers in there, the fire department, the dog team. And I kept asking officers, I'm like, are you going to take any prints? And their response was, there were too many people already in the apartment with the police department and the fire department and the family that they didn't feel they would be able to get print. The two envelopes with the extra $100 in each of them, they did fingerprint those, but they didn't get any viable fingerprints off of them, is what I was told.
This money that Tanya is referring to is the extra $200 that Betty had in her possession that no one has been able to locate the source of. It seemed to Tanya that once she mentioned that her mom was in the early stages of dementia, that the police focused in on that and not preserving a potential crime scene.
The very first night when they were all in there, I think at that point they thought that she had just wandered off because I had mentioned that word dementia and they, you know, thought full-fledged dementia. The house was not processed as a crime scene. And then I actually had to push the issue of having luminol used at the house to see if there was any blood. I had to ask if I could go and buy a kit on Amazon myself and attempt to do it before I finally was able to have that done. They said that they didn't find any blood at the scene. It could be if there was no struggle, if she was just sleeping in her recliner and was taken out the front door, that could be a possibility that there was no blood at her house. There was a deep scratch in the glass of her screen door that was fairly long, probably about a foot long, and it would have been the height of if somebody would have struggled to get her out the door and if they had something on that would have scratched into the door.
We also briefly spoke to a private investigator who offered his services to Tanya and her family free of charge. Tanya's private investigator also mentioned the scratch on the door and that he believes it's significant to Betty's case.
When I went out to Sullivan to talk to Tanya and meet with her over at her mother's apartment, the cops were already done with their scene investigation. Everything was still left pretty much the same. I went in, did my investigation to look at the scene in my notes, and eyeglasses were on the recliner. Clothes were on the bed. Two boxes of fentanyl patches were missing. Her purse was there. Nothing was in disarray. It's as if she got up out of the chair and answered the door. So to me, she knew who this person was. No sign of forced entry, because I checked all the windows, the edges of the windows. And there was a little scratch that kind of went down in a 45-degree angle on the window of the storm door on the inside. It's as if you had the door open, and if you know, and I believe Betty Alexander still kept her wedding band on because her husband passed away a few months before she'd come up missing. There was like a diamond scratch on the window. That's the best way I can describe this scratch, going down in a 45-degree angle. And nobody mentioned that. Could that have been a scratch from a ring, or could that have been just from anything? Who knows? But I do know it had to be somebody that she knew.
Tanya believes that the scratch on the screen door and the fact that her mom's glasses and purse were left behind are indications that she didn't leave voluntarily, and agrees with the private investigator that she likely opened the door to someone that she knew. This is what she told us about that.
My gut instinct when I showed up to the apartment, and I still to this day feel the same way, is that she was napping in her chair and had her glasses off. Somebody had knocked on the door, startled her, and somehow had taken her. Just from her staying at my house, I knew as soon as she woke up, before she even stepped foot on the floor, she would put her glasses on. So I don't see her going anywhere without her glasses on.
Tanya also shared with us that she feels as though the law enforcement investigation is progressing, and that detectives have acknowledged that Betty's disappearance probably involved foul play, though she fears the investigation has since gone cold, as all the early leads have dried up.
He's still working her case. Once in a blue moon, if I call him or text him, or if he thinks that, you know, there's some kind of a tip that he finds interesting and he wants to know if I know this person or something along those lines. But we don't talk often at all. But I think he really has nothing coming in that he feels that he can go off of as far as tips or anything to follow. It's kind of like I'm stuck with nothing else to do as far as following up on anything. I don't think he has really gotten much as far as leads, so I don't know. As far as I know, he's told me about any leads that he's gotten. And like he had told me before, they did assume that she had wandered off in the first place from dementia. And then a couple months later, he told me, he said, she didn't just wander off. Somebody else was involved. So I know what his feelings are.
Tanya feels like a lot of the investigation has been left on her shoulders, with siblings who aren't interested in searching and police who don't do much either. She told us that while she's very busy raising her own children, that the search for her mom often consumes her.
It's been the longest few years of my life. That's all you think about. Anywhere you go, anything you do, you're just looking for answers.
I can't believe that there's still nothing. And any searches that we've done since the initial search, I've had to do myself. The police department put on that first initial search, and then they won't do any more. They checked the lake at the golf course, which is closest to her. And then the next closest thing, there is the Merrimack River. I did reach out to the conservation department there, the people that run the state park, and had asked them if they could have their employees do a search as well. Of that area. And then I had gone down there several times myself, just not even knowing where to look, just looking just for something to do, somewhere to look. But as far as doing anything near the river in that area, the police never did any diving or anything there either. I don't know if maybe they thought it without having any kind of idea that that's for sure where she was. Maybe they didn't want to waste resources and have somebody go out there and check that off. We have searched numerous times the wooded areas that are closest to her apartment. We've had several canine teams that have come in that have searched. We had the Christian Aid Ministry come in from all over the state. They're trained to do searches, and they went covered an extensive area, the wooded area that's by her apartment as well, and there's still just been absolutely nothing.
Tanya has seen many important events and milestones pass since Betty vanished, and she struggles with the lack of answers, but also the fact that her mom isn't there to see her grandchildren, who she so enjoyed spending time with.
We're just kind of still stuck at square one. It's been hard on the kids. We've kind of adjusted how we do holidays. You know, we would always spend them with mom and dad. And for Christmas, me and my daughter and my mom would always do Christmas cookie trays. And so we actually, the first Christmas that she wasn't there, we ended up going and doing Chinese because I just couldn't make a meal. I couldn't have that meal without her there. And it's been hard every holiday not having her there. And every birthday and the kids' birthdays, she would always be there, you know. We'll talk about it a little bit here and there, but as far as anything that comes up, discussion between the detective and myself, I keep it to myself. They're just kind of sad when we have holidays and she's not there, and it's just not the same. We've actually gotten to the point now where we can talk about her a little bit easier without getting so upset when we're having conversations. It's extremely hard. It's been pure hell for 2 years. It's been the longest 2 years of my life. I feel really frustrated. I wonder if I'm ever going to find mom. It's hard with it being this long. I don't know if there's any hope if we'll ever have answers. I keep praying every day that we'll have something. But the longer it goes on, the harder it gets to know that we'll finally get closure.
So what happened to Betty Alexander in April of 2019? Was her dementia diagnosis worse than doctors or her family knew? Or could one of her medications have affected her mental state? Or did something far more sinister happen to Betty, and someone wanted to harm her because they knew she was prescribed a very lucrative, easily abused medication? And why did some of her family members suddenly remove her belongings from her apartment and then move another relative in what appeared to be a secret that left Tanya in dismay? And where are Betty's belongings today? There are so many questions in this case. Why did Betty have extra money in her purse? And what happened to that missing box of fentanyl patches? And who was that guy that Betty was seen with at City Hall? With so many questions and small yet mysterious clues, it's hard to piece together what may have happened to Betty. But this is what we do know. On Wednesday, April 10th, 2019, Betty went to City Hall in the morning to conduct some business. This occurred around 10:30 a.m., and the City Hall clerk observed Betty with a disheveled-looking man. Betty turned in a form that seemed to have been filled out by someone else, but signed by Betty. Tanya recalled that she had filled out that form for her mother, but mailed it in. So Betty didn't need to turn that form in herself. Later that day, Betty's cleaning lady stopped by with food, and then the pharmacy dropped off Betty's medication. All of Betty's medication appeared to be taken on that Wednesday. However, the next day, Thursday, April 11th, Betty had vanished and taken none of her medicine. A healthcare provider attempted to call Betty to verify an appointment, but received no answer. The local Meals on Wheels volunteers tried to deliver Betty's food twice, but there was no answer when they knocked at the door. The next day, Meals on Wheels stopped by again and delivered Betty's meals because the front door was open. They set the food on Betty's table, closed the door, and left. They did this because they had an agreement with Betty to leave the food if she wasn't there. By Sunday, April 14th, Tanya was still unable to reach Betty, and when she went by her house, the door was locked and the meals left for Betty were untouched. Tanya immediately called the police and the search began. The last time Betty was physically seen alive was around 3 p.m. on Wednesday the 10th. She was seen by that relative who later moved into her apartment, but we also know that she was alive on the afternoon of the 10th because she had multiple interactions with people that day, and it appeared that she had taken her nighttime medication that evening, which she did every night at 7 p.m. So what happened to Betty between the afternoon of April 10th and the following day when she was suddenly gone without a trace? At the time that Betty disappeared, her glasses, purse, and medications were left behind at the home. Nothing appeared to be out of order, except that there was one box of fentanyl patches missing, and extra cash in Betty's purse, which she kept in her closet. There was no sign of forced entry into her home or any sign of a struggle. If you have any information about Betty Alexander's disappearance, you're asked to call the Sullivan Police Department at 573-468-8001.
I still am just dumbfounded. There's no clue still. We have no suspects. We follow up on anything, any possible lead, anything that's called in, and it always seems to lead to nowhere. I still can't believe that to this day we have nothing. We still don't know where she is or what could have happened to her. I believe that somebody was involved and somebody knows something. I just can't understand what exactly happened, why anybody would want to take her. I don't see how she could have just up and left, but as of right now, we still have no clue what happened, where she could be. I really strongly believe somebody out there knows something. They saw something. With her living in the middle of town, somebody had to see her if she was walking anywhere. It's a very busy section.
That brings us to the end of episode 298. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from South Carolina. Thanks for listening.
Around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.